It's Mary
and Jenny,
and we came into our identities in our 30s.
This is Queerly,
where we do life in community.
Hello, we back.
Hello.
It's so exciting to always come and just have a conversation with Jenny.
I know. I love talking to you.
Same. And anyway, we love you, Queer Dope Souls, that are taking this journey with us. It's been amazing. Lots of learning, lots of laughter, lots of joy. And anyway, so I'm going to ask you, where was your joy last week, Jenny?
My joy is coming back from a really fun work trip in Texas. I went to Dallas and Houston. We were premiering one of our newest documentaries for a nonprofit that I work for called Road Trip Nation. And it was so fun. The road trippers were so funny, introspective. They were brilliant in being on stage and retelling their experiences and their learnings. I don't know. I was so inspired by them. And I think the audience as well. They had so many nuggets of wisdom. I think they went on the road trip last December. Watching them on screen and seeing the growth to seeing them on stage. I got to moderate both of the premiere events, and they were just so phenomenal. I couldn't be more proud and so inspired by all four of them. So that's my joy.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much, Jenny, for sharing. There's one thing I really like. Every time Jenny tells me about her week or like what's been going on, there's not one thing I really admire about her life is her job. She gets to travel all the time. And I think that's like one of the best perks that you can get from it, depending on your personality.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah.
But for me, I admire that bit about her job, the fact that she gets to travel. And she's in Texas today, and tomorrow she's like in Indianapolis, and the next day she's in New Mexico. So it's pretty
New York,
cool.
New York.
Oh, New York.
Yeah. No, but I'm very grateful. Yeah. Very grateful.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool that she gets to travel for work.
What about you, Mary? What was your joy?
So as I've talked about before, I work in a school, an independent school, and I had the opportunity to travel with some of the children this past week. It was an overnight trip. And the thing that brought me a lot of joy was being able to kayak amidst being responsible for the children. I love, love, love kayaking. I love water activities. Jenny knows this. In fact, I'm looking forward to meeting Jenny's mother because she does like stand-up paddle boarding. For those of you that don't know paddle boarding, it's just like a paddle board. You stand on it and sort of like, is it raw? But yeah, but this time I'm talking about kayaking. So that brought me a lot of joy because it was in the middle of the week and I was able to engage in an activity that helps me work out, but also just helps me relax and enjoy nature. So that was my joy this week.
Nice. I love it. Recently, I was just talking to Mary about her family upbringing.
Yeah.
And I am so blown away by how much of a movie it sounds like. And I'll let her get into it, but I just to kick off this podcast, you know, we really want to talk about family upbringing, but as soon as Mary was telling me all of her stories, I think it's very important for us to all learn from your stories. And to for me, it really made me feel grateful, very privileged for where I grew up. My family emigrated here from Vietnam. I still feel very privileged to have been raised here.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know how we can start.
Well, I don't know if it sounds like a movie, but yeah, I guess it could be a movie. One of the things that I guess why we chose this topic in the beginning when we're looking for different aspects or different aspects of our lives that we could discuss. We thought about family and upbringing because when you're born into a family, these are your people. These are people that shape your reality when you're a child and when you're being raised. And it does have a huge impact in your outlook on life. And eventually, how you interact outside of your family, usually shaped by your upbringing and the community that you're exposed to and the different things that you get to experience within that. And that's where the desire or the need to talk about family and upbringing came from. And I guess I have to start this off by giving a little background about my upbringing. I know I've said this before, I was raised in Uganda, but I'm just going to expand a little. So I was raised by a Christian mom, like really Christian mom, Ugandan standards, prayer warrior, for those of you that understand what that is, and also raised by a Muslim dad who was also very much into his beliefs, which meant that I was raised in a very, very religious family or environment. Mm. So the upside to this is I think today I'm able to look at both sides of the coin. Like I could listen to a Christian say something and I could be able to criticize it, or I could be able to say, oh, that makes sense. But I could also have empathy for someone that's a Muslim, because my whole dad's side of the family is Muslim. So the downside to being raised in a family where there's both Christian beliefs and Muslim beliefs is the power struggles between the parents. And sometimes they're very silent, but very loud at the same time. And so being raised in this, in such an environment, was just a constant battleground for me and my siblings. I remember us like being very drawn to Christian celebrations like Christmas and Easter. Uh-huh. So we really loved Christmas because then you'd get to decorate stuff like Christmas tree and then put all these kinds of decorations around, and then we would get gifts. You find gifts under the Christmas tree on Christmas morning. So we really and as a kid, I mean, who doesn't love that, like having decorations around the house? But then one Christmas, or like one of those times, after we decorated and put so much effort and we were so happy, my dad came and destroyed everything. What? He trashed all the decorations, he trashed the Christmas tree, he trashed everything.
Wait, why?
So I think that's an example of power struggle. So I think in his head, as patriarchy dictates, children should be Muslim, because if I'm the man and I'm the father of these children, then these children should be Muslim and they shouldn't be bringing Christian.
Wait, but were you celebrating Christmas every year and then just one year he like trashed
it? Yeah, 1 year he trashed everything.
But you had been doing it.
Yeah. We'd been doing it. And for me, ever since that point, I've never decorated for Christmas again. It was that traumatizing for me. I've never.
Whoa.
And it's been years and years and years. I've never, even like up to now, I don't decorate for Christmas. It was just very traumatic. I was very sad.
Do you know what triggered him to do that year?
I mean, honestly, I can't say that I know. I think I was about 10. Or maybe 11. And so I think at that point, you just have a limited knowledge of what's going on with your parents. But I think by that age, I knew that there was an imbalance of power in my parents' marriage.
Wait, so what was your mom going through? Or do you remember what she was feeling during that time?
I don't remember, but there was nothing she could do. And that's I at that age, I knew that my mom never had power in that relationship. Yeah. And it really used to bother me. At this point, I didn't know what patriarchy was. I didn't know what misogyny was.
Mm-hmm.
But I very much could tell that there was an imbalance of power. And in my little brain, it didn't make sense. If there's two people that come together and love each other and are raising children together, then both of them should have a say. Like one person shouldn't have a say over the other person. I think my dad kind of took it as maybe my mom's kind of getting the kids to take her side of the faith, but really she wasn't. It was just more exciting. Like who doesn't want to get a Christmas present? So
that was that imbalance of power. Mm-hmm. Was exactly how my parents were in like in the finances.
Mm.
So my dad had complete control over all of the money that my mom was bringing in and the money that he was bringing in. So he would create the bank accounts. He would not let her touch any of that. So she didn't even, she had no financial literacy in opening her own bank account. Or, I mean, I know they have like joint, a joint bank account, but he would never let her see any of that. She would just continue working. And she was the one making a lot of the money.
Wait, so she wouldn't even spend the money on like her nails or like...
No, she'll spend...
A treat for
herself? She would spend money, but it would be... She wouldn't know how much was left or anything like that. But she knew how much she was bringing in because she was the one working. She was working in nail salons. And at the time, she was making a lot because she was really good. Mm. And my dad is an engineer. Mm-hmm. But he... also was very addicted to gambling. Mm-hmm. And so he lost a lot of money, but she would pay off like in cash, like all of his debts. It would be thousands and thousands of dollars would be paid off.
Wow.
By my mom, but she would not know any of this.
Wow. So your mom was actually working hard.
She was working so hard,
but she had no idea how much money was left, like was in the bank account. All she knew is where she was working hard to make sure that her family is well looked after, but had no say in how the money was.
She helped me and my brother through college. Like everything was provided by her. Cause I recently had a conversation with her about this and you know, it had been years since we'd like talked about our child, like my childhood trauma and how my family's separation affected all of us. But we're starting to have these conversations, me and my mom. And yeah, she didn't know. She didn't have any idea of how much was there, how much was going to the house, how much was going to gambling, how much was going to anything, but she knew how much she was making.
That is so different that our moms were in different sides of the world, but experiencing an imbalance of power in their relationships.
Oh, yeah.
I guess that's a commonality. I can't speak so much for married people. I'm not married myself, but that's something I saw. And I guess it's more common than we realize, the imbalance of power in relationships, especially when put within the box of patriarchy, then it even becomes more imbalanced.
Yeah.
And I think in a sense that probably could have affected the way I looked at life. And I remember for a long time not really wanting to be anywhere near marriage because I was like, if marriage involves me losing autonomy over who I am, if it means me not, because I didn't understand why my dad could not let my mom be a Christian if that's what she wanted to be. And it just didn't make sense. I mean, society, community would have all these explanations that, oh, the man determines everything. But it just didn't make sense to me if someone is educated and they have their own faith system, which is being a Christian, and someone else is also like a Muslim and they come together, I feel like there needs to be mutual respect of each other's. But so it didn't make sense to me. And so for a long time, I just thought marriage is a place where women lose their power and autonomy.
Wow.
That's how I internalized it.
That's how you saw marriage.
Yeah. And it was not just my family, but I would see so many other people around me. But that's, for me, that's how I internalized it. That marriage was a place where women lost power, autonomy, and their dreams died. I mean, it's a crazy way to look at it. But I think as a child, you're very impressionable. And I think what's happening around you really informs how you navigate life. And maybe other things that I could add on that really describe my family. So for a long time, my family seemed nuclear, which means I had my mom, I had my dad, and then I had my two siblings. Mm-hmm. So it was five of us in one family. But later on in life, I must have been about still 11 or 12, I learned that someone I thought was my cousin was actually my half-sister. So that I, for a long time, I was like, why couldn't my dad ever sit us down and tell us that this girl who sometimes comes to see us is actually our sister? It just never, like, I never got why we couldn't have that conversation as a family.
Yeah.
And the reason I got to find out that she was my sister was because when she stayed with us, I was referring to her as a cousin. And so then she wrote a letter to me and she told me, no, I'm not your cousin. I'm actually your sister. And so, of course, I showed the letter to my brother at that time. And I realized, oh, this is actually my half-sister. But it would have been just so much easier if my dad was open about that. It's not uncommon for people to have children besides the person that they're married to. And I also wondered why he didn't treat her right. Like, I don't feel like my dad did right by my older half-sister.
Well, because he was probably feeling the shame and guilt.
Yeah, but he shouldn't have.
Oh, no. Yeah, yeah.
Like, he shouldn't have. Because especially him coming from a polygamous family where they had, like, tons of moms.
Oh.
And, yeah, and tons of siblings.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I mean, in Uganda, it's like Muslim is synonymous with polygamy. So you'll find that many Muslim men tend to have, like, up to 4 wives. It's not the norm, but it's really acceptable.
Oh, I see.
By most people in the society. So that was one aspect to it. Small, seemed like a small nuclear family, but it really wasn't. And then also in my extended family, which is looking at both my mom's side and my dad's side, cheating was so normal.
What?
I remember, how old was I? I think a lot of defining moments for me happened when I was 11 and 12. I think I remember my parents taking me to a wedding meeting. Now, wedding meetings are a big deal back home.
Wait, wedding meetings?
Yeah. So when someone's going to get married, they usually have wedding meetings whereby they fundraise money for the wedding.
Oh.
So like usually these wedding meetings could go like over a month. So maybe every, I would say Friday they meet. Mm-hmm. There's like a meeting and people like... say, oh, I pledge.
I don't know how many dollars. It really is like a fundraising event.
Yeah, it is really like a fundraising event with like a budget and everyone's like pledging of an item. So I remember my parents taking me to one of those weddings. I think I was 12. I must say I was 12. Primary 7, that should be 12 or 13, but 12, I think. And so I'm sitting, I'm young. Okay, I'm a young girl and sitting, I think, besides my mom. So one other thing that I really dislike about family dynamics, and I think it happens in most places, is somehow people tend to separate into the male sitting on one side and the female sitting on one side. I always found it weird, but I think that's the dynamic of society. I don't have a say in that. So I think I ended up sitting with my mom, and I think on this other side where like the men... And I remember some of those men making passes at some of the young girls and saying,
Oh my gosh.
I was so disturbed. But then you're young and all these things, you're trying to understand the world and trying to figure life. I was so uncomfortable. But the older I grew, the more I saw it was normal. Like people could make passes at other girls in the presence of their wives.
Oh my gosh.
Very heartbreaking, especially for me. I feel like I'm a romantic at heart.
Yeah.
So seeing a lot of these things really was a turn off. Even at that young age, I think processing some of these things. And also my mom was going through a lot. There's things I can't mention on the podcast because I just don't think it's the right time to talk about them, but she was also navigating things and I was like her only confidant. And so at the age of 12 and 13, I knew a lot of stuff that I just shouldn't have been carrying on my shoulders. So I feel like also I was a city kid. Also, I was born, I would say, into a middle-class African family. So I did have, you know, that privilege of attaining a good education, having good friends and, you know, all that stuff. But I think all of this, when I look back, it has had an impact on how I navigate the world.
Yeah.
But also, there's an aspect I haven't mentioned is I felt a lot of restriction growing up, a lot of restriction in my expression. And I think I can break down a few examples. Is that okay?
Yeah, I can break down a few examples.
So I've already talked about how religious my upbringing was, because religion in itself is very restricting. Then I've talked about, nuclear family, maybe extended family, middle class, city kid, and all that stuff. But I think the thing I struggled the most with in the environment that I was raised in was restriction in my expression. So my mother, dear soul, I love her, the best mother anyone could ever have. But she, one, used to control my dress code a lot. And I don't know if it was because I was her eldest daughter, and there's something that happens with patriarchy and religion, or there's something that happens with how we try to control girls, their bodies, and how they dress. And I think that was the way my mom was trying to protect me. But so she would usually buy me wear long, ugly dresses and long, ugly skirts. And I always wanted to wear jeans. I wanted to wear like jean shorts and jean trousers. She never, however much I asked, she never ever bought me a pair of jean shorts or jean trousers. And I was only able to buy these things when I started to make money, which was when I was an adult.
Always wear jeans.
And I feel like that could possibly be the reason why I'm addicted to jeans. I am really, really addicted to jeans, and that could be part of that. She also controlled how I sat for a long, because I don't know, like sometimes I would sit, like as I'm sitting right now with my legs a little bit open, she would say, do not sit like that, girls do not sit like that, you have to cross your legs, you have to pull your skirt down. It was a lot, and I tried to be what she told me, but inside I was unhappy.
Then
I also felt like society controlled my expression, and this could come, like one of these things would be through maybe grandparents or the larger society. I remember I was 11, my dad bought us a bicycle, a nice mountain bike. My first time to own a bike. I could already ride a bike because my lovely cousins taught me how to ride their BMX bicycles. So I was pretty good at riding a bike. So he bought us a bike when I was about 11 that we shared amongst the three of us. At that time, my sister wasn't able to really ride it because she was the shortest of us. But the two of us, my bro and I, could ride it. And I remember my grandmother saying girls shouldn't ride bicycles. Mm-hmm. And I was so broken. I was like, why? What is wrong with a bicycle? And sometimes my dad would repeat these things to us. And I don't know what his goal was in repeating. Because I remember him saying, oh, your grandmother said you shouldn't be riding a bicycle because girls don't ride bicycles.
Well, I feel like that is a big part of society. Girls shouldn't do this. Girls shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
I remember in high school, I loved sports. Mm-hmm. I feel like for me, I didn't see a lot of like Vietnamese girls playing sports, and maybe because there wasn't a huge Vietnamese population around me or at my school. But I loved, like, I know. I played sports with my brother growing up, and I love being better at him for some things. But then, you know, we would do everything together. We would, like, physically fight, you know, which, when he got really big, it started getting really hard. But like, we played sports together. We played football, basketball, badminton, like in the backyard.
I love badminton.
Yeah, it's so fun. But we played a lot of like contact sports, and I loved it. And I remember one time telling my dad that I wanted to like try out for the football team. I think I was just saying it as a joke, but I was like, I wish girls can play football. Like, I want to try out. And I think he got so angry. He like stopped everything. He looked at me and he was saying, girls don't do that. Like, I think he was about to like hit me, because he's, you know, I think for Asian parents, spanking was acceptable.
Same.
And so normal in our childhood, even though it's not right, but yeah, it was so normal. Like I grew up.
I'm with you. I don't really think it achieves the purpose.
Yeah. Yeah. But that was part of our childhood. But yeah, he was so angry and just stopped and was just like, girls don't do that. And then he started yelling and going off on a tangent about what I should and shouldn't do. And I was just like, I'm not going to hear this right now. So I just left. But I mean, obviously I did not say that. I just like nodded, was quiet because I was really scared of my dad growing up. But I just remember loving sports and thinking like, how come I can't play sports if I find so much joy in being active, you know? But I will like thank my parents. I was able to play volleyball and basketball.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Big up to basketball.
Love basketball, even though I wasn't that great. But I loved it. And, you know, I think it was the perception of like football being a male sport that he was just so angry about. But he did let me play other sports. Mm-hmm. It was just a sport that was acceptable for women. He allowed. I don't know. It was weird.
Yeah, that's a very interesting reaction.
Yeah.
To one of your kids wanting. It's very interesting to me. And I'm right now I'm trying to kind of process. I'm like, what was it about it that got him so angry? Was he thinking that you would lose your femininity if, did I even say that word right?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, I'm just trying to understand where the you know, the passion, the anger.
Yeah.
Because it seems such an innocent, desire. Like a young girl just saying, oh, I'd love to play football.
And we grew up playing, we grew up playing, like my brother and I would play football in the backyard. Mm. But we grew up watching football because that was all my dad watched. Mm. But I think maybe because he sees it as such a male sport.
Right.
That triggered him. I don't know.
It probably did. And it's so interesting that girls have to navigate a lot of this. Just generally, I think around the globe, girls have to navigate a lot of, you can do this. Mm-hmm. You can do that. That's a man's sport. That's a boy's sport.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's sad. I feel like sports shouldn't have a gender. Mm-hmm. I feel like young girls should be led to explore as much as possible and then say, oh, I don't like that. Oh, this is too hard for me. But at least be given the opportunity to explore all kinds of sports.
Yeah.
So I think maybe our stories are not that unique in a sense. So many people out there that want to try out sports but are not able to just because they're girls. And maybe their communities think that it's just something that a boy should do. But
and that's a whole nother conversation too. Right. I really want to dive deeper into like the WNBA.
Oh,
the
we NBA really have to. Because, that would be amazing.
Yeah. I think I learned a lot from you having that conversation with you.
Yeah, we'll definitely dive into the WNBA. But anyway, just coming back a little bit to how I felt like my childhood didn't let me express society, especially I was trying to give examples of society. So the other thing was, I remember one of my aunts, my mom's sister, talking down onto my hairstyle and telling me I had like, I think even if I wasn't able to express myself, sometimes I was able to like do things that were out of the norm. And I remember her talking down to me and telling me, no one will marry you with that hairstyle. And what would I think to say to her, like a 20-year-old? It's like the nastiest thing to say, like someone trying to express themselves and you're putting them down, like their whole existence is there for a man. Because that's the message. Yeah. That's the message she gave me. Like, if you try and express who you are or try and explore who you are, you're not gonna make a certain man happy. Or like, I exist to make a certain man happy. These are things that really disturbed me because it just was like a damper or whatever it is into my expression. And then once I was actually doing my undergrad at one of the universities. I used to love wearing anklets. I don't wear them anymore. I'm not sure why. Maybe because I haven't found any good quality ones. But I remember her straight to my face telling me that I shouldn't wear anklets because anklets are for prostitutes.
Oh, and I'm like, gosh.
Yeah. So basically, I was raised, obviously, I'm not a prostitute. I've never been. I do not have, by the way, I do not have anything against prostitutes. I think sex workers have a right to exist in and have a right to fight for their rights.
Sex
and,
work is work.
Yeah, sex work is work. Really, it is work. And I don't have, but I wasn't a sex worker, and I don't know why. I guess the society.
But she used it
as a derogatory,
in a negative
connotation. She made me feel really bad about me trying to express myself. And I think my childhood really, like everything I navigated, innocent as it seemed, or just a one-off, these one-off comments as they seemed, I think were very instrumental in me suppressing a certain part of who I am. And I think that could probably be one, I'm not saying it is, but could probably be one of the reasons it took me a long time to explore this other side of my identity, the identity of me that's queer and is happy about queer. Because for a long time, every time I tried to express myself or just was being a kid, then something was being said that would put me down. And some of these comments really, like, I don't do Christmas decorations just because of my dad's reaction. Wow. Or I don't even wear anklets anymore. And I don't even know why I don't wear anklets anymore.
Well, because that's trauma.
Yeah. But yeah, so I feel like, and Jenny hasn't talked a lot about her upbringing because she said she would rather listen.
Well, I was just really... Yeah, I was just really loving learning about Mary's upbringing and, you know, sprinkling in here and there from my upbringing. But I didn't realize how much we can talk about with this. We can probably have a part two, you know, another recording.
Yeah, we can talk about WNBA just from this podcast.
Oh, yeah. We can talk about a lot from this podcast. But I mean, I would love to go through my upbringing, but I think just like a gist of it is my dad, and I mentioned this before too, my dad is a traditional Vietnamese man. He came over here after the war ended. My mom and they both come from, they both are one of 10. So I have a lot of aunties and uncles, large family, both one of 10.
Great.
Yeah, but my mom escaped her country after the war ended with her two sisters and her two brothers. And I think that story is really incredible. And I think she and my dad are just complete opposites. She was pretty young. She was 16 when she left her country. She didn't know the language.
Yeah.
But she set out to just make it. And I think that's why she is such a powerful woman now and so admirable and just so lovable, because she just had that open perspective to adapt, to use what she has and just thrive. She's a hard worker, but she is so full of compassion and joy with anything that she does, even though she will struggle, even though she is faced with obstacles. She always does it so gracefully and so joyfully, you know? And I think that's where I get a lot of my love from, is from her. And I had to learn that too, because I also have a lot of my dad in me. You know, I'm not just my mom. I am also my dad. And I think that is something that I'm healing from or working through, peeling back all of those layers. But that's just a little bit of background with my parents. But yeah, I feel like there are some similarities too with our upbringing. Mm-hmm. But I'm just so intrigued by your upbringing in Uganda. That's just wild. I think it just makes me feel very privileged and very lucky to have grown up where I grew up
with your parents too.
Yeah,
like just being thankful for your parents. By the way, I am thankful for my parents, but there's something that Jenny has just mentioned. She used the word healing. And I feel like revisiting our childhoods, going deep inside to that inner child, and revisiting some of those things that could have caused you trauma, I feel like is the path to having more fulfilling relationships and experiences the older that we grow. Because even talking through this, I'm able to like go back and say, okay, this is an area where I need to give more love to my little self, or this is an area I need to let Mary explore more just so that I can heal some of those experiences. I don't think our parents were trying to hurt us.
No.
They were just navigating life in the way that they best knew how. But obviously, you know, in any relationship, there's still going to be pain, even if there's a lot of love.
Yeah.
And parenting is just one of those things whereby you're not given a manual. Mm-hmm. And one parenting style or one family unit is never the same as another. It's always different. And so I give grace to both my parents, but it doesn't stop me from going back to revisit the little and the big traumas that I experienced as a child. And I would say the same for everyone out there. If you have the opportunity to do, you know, in a safe environment, you can revisit some of those childhood memories and give yourself a little love.
Yeah.
And a little healing.
Thank you for sharing all of that and diving deep into that. I know we could probably have another episode about family upbringing, but we do want to try to keep these episodes a little bit shorter. So let's end with Queerly Noted. What's after the conversation today and really reliving your childhood, some traumas, childhood memories, what is your Queerly Noted for today?
So my Queerly Noted for today is love on yourself hard and give grace for your families, but also even if you're giving grace for your families, remember to keep your healthy boundaries in place, because not all of us come from loving families. Some of us come from some very toxic families. But love on yourself hard and heal the little child within you. Take time to heal the little child within you. That's my Queerly Noted. Let's go. What about you, Jenny?
Beautiful. I think listening to you speak and, you know, having conversations more with my mom about childhood trauma and family trauma, it makes me realize that, and now I can look back, because I am healing, I can look back at the trauma that my parents both had. So being able to, Mary and her silent snaps again.
I'm trying to respect the pod recording.
Being able to recognize that your parents also had a lot of trauma with their families, but acknowledging that, you know, being able to be aware of that. I think my mom had a lot of love growing up from her family, but I did not see my dad receiving a lot of love from his family. And maybe that's why he is the way he is. Well, I'm sure he is the way he is because of that.
That's deep, Jenny.
Yeah. So that's, I think, really deep. Yeah, just hearing this and really reflecting on family. Yeah, you said it perfectly. Give your parents grace. I think for me, that's, there's a lot to unpack too still, but I definitely am seeing more and accepting more of where my parents were at when maybe they have treated us wrongly or treated us in not the best way.
Thank you. That is really profound. Like, I'm going to say that again because it really struck a chord. Jenny said that going back can enable us to understand that our parents were also dealing with traumas, their own traumas. And that's very deep.
Yeah.
It's very deep in healing, healing maybe the relationship with your parents, but also in healing you and knowing that your parents had nothing against you, but they were navigating their own fears, their own traumas, and they have these babies that they love dearly, but the world is like, I gotta make money anyway. But it's been amazing sharing with you, and you know, just sharing with Jenny as well. It's been great, and so we love you. And do you know what just occurred to me? That even if we're exploring our lives and our identities after finding them at that section of our identities in our 30s, this feels like therapy too.
No, it does.
It feels like therapy.
It really does. We're processing. We're verbally processing.
Right. Anyway, it's been amazing. Stay safe. Stay beautiful. Be kind. Till next time.
Love y'all.
Yo. If you want to support Queerly, follow, rate, and leave a review on the podcast platform of your choice.
We would love to hear from you, so please reach out to us at hi.queerly@gmail.com or follow us on Instagram at Queerly Community. That's QUEERLYQMUNITY. Love y'all!